My name is Ben Greenfield, and on this episode of the Ben Greenfield Life Podcast,
but we believe the mechanism for damage from EMFs is because it catalyzes the release of calcium inside the cell, because the levels of calcium outside the cell are 50,000 times higher, 50,000 times higher. So when it goes into the cell, it's a powerful signaling molecule. What does the signal cell do? It tells cells what some of the things are. It increases the release of superoxide and also nitric oxide. And those are two molecules that they get even close to each other. They instantaneously form some this reactive nitrogen species called peroxynitrite. And that is really, really damaging, probably collectively far more damaging than hydroxyl free radical, because hydroxyl radical only lasts about a billionth of a second. This peroxynitrite lasts 1,000 times longer, so long that it can actually migrate outside of the mitochondria, outside of that cell, and go into another cell in the mitochondria and hang around that long.
Faith, family, fitness, health, performance, nutrition, longevity, ancestral living, biohacking, and a whole lot more. Welcome to the show. I've used it for years. It's one of my go-to nootropic blends because it's like brain food. It's vegan, it's non-GMO, supports focus and memory and mental energy. 28 research-backed nootropics packed into one teeny tiny bottle. If you've appreciated my work for the last 7 years now, you can attribute a great deal of that to this nootropic. It's called Qualia Mind. Qualia Mind. It's fueled my brain for years now. And you feel it within days. I would say within hours after taking it. You can also try it with a 100% money-back guarantee and 15% off. Here's how. Go to neurohacker.com/BGF and use code BGF at checkout. It's already up to 50% off. You get an extra 15% off the already discounted price and get to try it for 100 days with no financial risk, money-back guarantee, neurohacker.com, neurohacker.com/BGF to try Qualia Mind and get an extra 15% off. How do you like that? Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use a special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. carolbike.com.
All right, folks, in today's episode, which I recorded for you on site with the great Dr. Joe Mercola down in Florida, we had a wide-ranging discussion on everything from the dangers of vegetable oil to intermittent hypoxic training to how this dude's beating young bucks in arm wrestling and a whole lot more. Dr. Joe first joined me on two episodes that I'll link to in the show notes if you go to bengreenfieldlife.com/Mercola3. It's bengreenfieldlife.com/Mercola3. We had one episode on killing fat cells and fixing mitochondria and growing superfoods. We had another one on EMFs and cell phone radiation and protecting yourselves from EMF exposure, even though we give you an updated how-to on that in today's show. Dr. Mercola, he goes way back. He's a doctor of osteopathic medicine with a real holistic approach. He's somewhat controversial, as you'll learn about in the first 10 to 15 minutes or so of today's episode. But for the longest time, you know, as a board-certified family physician, he practiced medicine, and he's written contributions and extensive experience in patient care. He was granted fellowship status by the American College of Nutrition. He's a best-selling author. He has everything from books about COVID-19 to the no-grain diet to the bird flu hoax to effortless healing, a whole bunch of different titles. He has a huge background in health, wellness, and technology, runs the very popular website you may have come across before called Mercola.com, has multiple awards. I mean, I'm at his house and he just has plaques and awards all over the wall for all of the work that he's done in medicine and health and beyond. And he just tirelessly works to disseminate important health information around the world, which sometimes turns him into a lightning rod and also earns him a lot of numerous awards and honors. And he's a very interesting guy, as you're about to learn if you've never heard him chatting before. So anyways, sit back or walk or lift or whatever it is you're doing right now and get ready for a great episode with Dr. Joseph Mercola.
All right. We did it. That was a fun little setup. Open the kimono for folks. Joe and I decided to try and do an entire podcast with no tech crew. No videographer, no scheduling, just lounging on the couch with our shirts peeled off.
That's right.
This might be the first shirtless episode, dual shirtless episode that I've done in quite some time.
Yeah, it reminds me, the last time I was with you personally was when we were at Mindshare in Arizona, Phoenix or whatever, somewhere. And we went to a lunch and we just decided, okay, this is going to be the shirtless table. We started a trend.
I remember that. We were the vitamin D table. Well, you've always been big on vitamin D. And by the way, I should get this out of the way before we even start. If you guys want the show notes, I'll put them at bengreenfieldlife.com/Mercola3. That's Mercola, the number three, because Joe, this is the third time that I've interviewed you. We did an interview on all sorts of things. I remember we talked a little bit about vitamin D, and then we had a whole interview about EMF. And I would love to revisit that a little bit today as it pertains to linoleic acid, particularly, not to scare people away with big words too early in the show. And then you know, today, I've returned to your compound in Florida. And yes, you have quite the lifestyle down here that includes plenty of shirtlessness. And you've always been pretty big on vitamin D. I mean, you got a plaque on the wall over there about you being the sunshine doctor or something.
Well, for this entire century, right? So it's long before COVID-19. Yes. Actually, my passion about vitamin D is somewhat what precipitated some of the challenges that I have in mainstream media. Because since we last connected, I had the honor of being named the number one spreader of COVID misinformation in 2021.
That's better than being named the number one spreader of COVID.
That's right. Yeah, by the White House and, you know, Biden and the head of the National Institutes of Health. So it was the best honor I've ever gotten in my life.
Did you get a plaque or a trophy? Or
no, I'm waiting. Well, I actually might
get a mask. Is like a gold mask?
Did not get that, but. Yeah, so partially that was precipitated by the influence I built up over a quarter century of having a website, but also my passion about vitamin D. And I actually had written my first peer-reviewed article this century, published in Nutrients, which is a pretty high-impact nutrition journal.
And this might happen to people who are watching or listening to this podcast. Like, if you click through to your website from, say, like Twitter or some other sites, it will say you're about to enter an unsafe website.
Yeah, phishing site.
Disinformation or phishing. Is that why?
Yeah, that's the other side.
Another mechanism.
No, that's No, that they're doing that. They're putting these warnings up there to make the public believe that I'm an incredible source. Incredible source.
Incredible. I like incredible. That's the best way to think about it. So when something like that happens, I'm just curious, you know, you don't have to spill all the business secrets on the podcast, but does that have a pretty big impact on site visitors, on business?
Yeah, it did. It's actually that exposure. It definitely helped us in many ways because we had been essentially buried for the most part in Google algorithms. And all the exposure brought my book, The Truth About COVID-19, to number one. And it was my best-selling book ever.
Could you actually buy that book on Amazon?
Oh, yeah, you could. They never took it off. Oh. So it was number one on USA Today, Wall Street Journal, Publishers Weekly.
I read that book when it first came out. It's fantastic. Yeah, but obviously pretty controversial.
Well, and that was 2 years, over 2 years ago now. And, you know, it was highly controversial and people claim me of lying through the book. But, you know, 2 years later, nothing's been disproven.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could obviously go down the COVID rabbit hole.
Yeah, we know we need to.
Blue in the face. But back to the vitamin D piece, which got us on this thread. So was your argument that there's a specific impact of vitamin D on the immune system?
That's my review paper that was published in Nutrients. Suggested that.
By the way, the reason I asked this question is just a few days ago, one of our mutual friends, Georgia Dinkoff, he's more of a friend of yours. I follow his stuff. I haven't had him on a podcast yet. But he published an article showing that about 4,000, 10,000 international units a day of vitamin D was one of the best things you could do to both prevent and survive GI cancer.
Yes.
I'm dealing with a cancer in the family right now, and I immediately sent that off to my family member because it's a very cheap and readily available supplement. Mm-hmm. It's also available via the sunshine. But you're originally doing your research on it related to the immune system?
Well, you know, I don't do lab research, but, you know, basically like you, investigative journalist that goes and compiles information and interviews the world-class experts. I've interviewed almost every world-class researcher on vitamin D over the years. And that one of the fundamental benefits it has is it radically reduces not just colon cancer, which is well documented for, but pretty much all types of cancers. It's very positive at preventing and treating cancers. Very similar to linoleic acid being the exact converse in increasing the risk of every cancer.
Yeah. You walk around with your shirt off a lot. We went along, you shirtless walk on the beach yesterday. I know you're a big sunshine hunter. Would you say that's the best way to get vitamin D, or do you supplement with it also?
I haven't taken a swallow of vitamin D supplement over 15 years.
Really?
Yeah, and yet my vitamin D levels are consistently over 100 nanograms per milliliter.
100?
100. Without swallowing.
What's your response to the people who are like, oh, it's going to cause calcification if you have too much vitamin D? Is that a myth, or is there any truth behind that? Or why do people say that?
Well, you have to be very, very careful when you swallow vitamin D orally.
So this is oral supplementation.
Oral supplementation, because there's no feedback going on. So, and there's, you know, a lot of the research that was published initially suggested that there was all these different, they correlate all these benefits to vitamin D. But most of the research that wasn't, it wasn't being that vitamin D level. People were taking vitamin D supplements. So almost all the elevated or vitamin D levels were related to sun exposure merely. So it's really served as a biomarker for sun exposure because there's other benefits other than ultraviolet B radiation, which only comprises about 4% of the spectrum of sunlight. And that's the specific wavelength and frequency that causes your body to convert 7-deoxycholesterol to vitamin D.
Now, is it true that there are certain genetic factors that might limit that conversion from occurring? Because I've seen people like... Kashi Khan from the DNA company. He's talked about that before on my podcast about how some people might have higher need for oral supplementation.
Yeah, and if there could be... More typically with the SNPs, it's the vitamin D receptors. Mm-hmm. But there are other variables that you can do that make a big difference. One of them is vitamin K2.
Okay.
And then the other would be magnesium.
Yeah.
So a lot of people who aren't taking enough magnesium, once they add it, then their vitamin D levels tend to normalize.
Now, the form of vitamin D, as a matter of fact, I was just texting last time with another guy. I'm interested in having him on the show. I haven't yet. Dr. Tyler Panzer, who does a lot related to genetic SNPs. I think he might do a little bit of work with Joe Cohen over at Self-Decode, if I'm not mistaken. He says that there's a form of oral vitamin D.
Joe Cohen was at our table in Mastermind.
That's right. That's right. He was also there. A cholecalciferol as an oral form that's more expensive but much more bioavailable and increases vitamin D levels within just a couple of weeks.
I think that's the other term for vitamin D is cholecalciferol.
Yeah. When you supplement with it, I believe a lot of times it's a hydroxyvitamin D form that's less bioavailable than this cholecalciferol. I could only find one company. I forget the name of it. If I can hunt it down and put it in the show notes, I will, that actually uses this cholecalciferol form. The reason this is interesting for me is because, according to Dr. Khan, I have not seen that would limit vitamin D conversion from sunlight, which makes sense because when I used to race Ironman, I was out in the sun sometimes 8 to 10 hours a day, and I tested levels were 30 to 40. Mm-hmm. And so now I do supplement. You know, I take around 2,000 units a day or so, and my levels are typically up in the 70s to 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
The hundreds a year.
Yeah, I would suggest a slight modification of that. In fact, I was just updating my script for my new master class in composing this, which is designed to empower people with the resource they're needed to survive the next coming crisis, I believe, which will be here at some point, not too distant future. But if the module was on sun exposure, and then when you're seeking to optimize your vitamin D levels, if you don't have access all the time, of course you're going to need an oral supplement. But on the days that you do get out there, don't take your vitamin D supplement. You're already getting it from the sun. That you're going to overdo.
Even if you have that genetic issue with the conversion?
I'm not convinced of that, because you're getting a pretty high level. The 2,000 is not the normal dose for oral D supplementation for most people. Mm-hmm. It's usually closer to 8,000, which is typical adult one requires.
Yeah. Or for some people, I know some functional medicine docs who will prescribe like a vitamin D bomb, like a 50,000 units of intramuscular.
Not recommended at all.
Yeah, sometimes.
Not recommended. Yeah.
Why do you recommend an approach like that?
Well, because you're inferring or implying it's a parenteral intramuscular injection. And the only way that's done is typically through vitamin D2, which is a plant-based version, not as healthy. Though Michael Hollick, who is probably the premier vitamin researcher, is fond of it. Most of the others are not.
Is there anything to be said for that strategy some people use, especially plant-based diet enthusiasts, to put mushrooms out in the sunlight to harness concentrate vitamin D in mushrooms?
It doesn't concentrate. It actually converts it. It converts
it to steroids. Like
yes, but it doesn't make vitamin D3. Humans make vitamin D3. Animals make vitamin D3. When you irradiate lanolin, which is the primary, almost exclusive raw material they use to create vitamin D supplements.
You mean lanolin from sheep?
Yes.
Okay.
That's how they create vitamin D. They irradiate lanolin with UVB. So that creates vitamin D3. When you make it from mushrooms, you create vitamin D2.
Okay.
Which is, I think, called ergocalciferol.
But if you take ergocalciferol or D2, you can still elevate your D level supplement.
There is some benefit to it because there's a cross reactivity in the receptors for sure, but it's not as good as a D3. It really isn't. It's vastly inferior.
I grew pink oyster mushrooms all last year. I have little rye blocks out in the forest, and I grow them and I take them, just put them out on the picnic table out the patio, leave them out in the sun all day. And those things are like, they're like vegan bacon, basically.
Yeah, amazing. For sure.
So the crisis that you just referred to, I don't want to necessarily allow you to drop that and leave it behind. Are you talking about an economic crisis or
everything,
something else?
Well, very similar to what we have with COVID, it's so much worse. Lockdowns, suppression, personal freedoms lost, just tyrannical oppression by the government, authoritarian control, over loss of personal freedoms.
Would there be a trigger for that, like another pandemic or something like that?
Yeah, there's going to be some ostensible trigger. It could be a false flag, what they did with 9/11. But something will trigger. It could be losing the grid. It could be another clearly infectious pandemic that's high on the likelihood. But they've kind of this was just a trial run, they've been getting worse and worse every 2 or 3 years. They've launched to make it, they try their tricks, and they've gotten more sophisticated and smarter with time, of course.
Yeah.
So it's no surprise.
Well, I mean, like, I feel like I'm a little bit more of a prepper on paper than you are. I'm in the forest and you're building a farm in Idaho with water cisterns and off grid and everything.
I have not showed you everything yet.
Well, maybe I haven't seen the bunker, but I got to ask you, you're doing an entire master class. I think you said it was 50 plus modules and hours of content, but you know, yeah, without without having to do the entire masterclass right here on the podcast, are there a few key things that, that you think people should do to prepare for something like this?
Yeah, what we just talked about, exposure to the sun rather than swallowing vitamin D supplements, because there's so many other benefits, you know, that being exposed to the sun would be. Two primary ones, when it increases the production of melatonin, not in your pineal gland, but in the subcellular spaces in your mitochondria where it's absolutely needed, because that's where most all of the reactive oxygen species are generated in energy production.
I thought bright lights suppress melatonin.
In the pineal gland.
Okay.
Not in the subcellular mitochondrial space.
Interesting.
In the mitochondria. So, and that's where you need melatonin.
So if you have elevated levels of melatonin,
this is by Russell Ryder, who's the primary researcher.
He knows a lot about mitochondria.
Yeah, he's got 1,500 papers.
Is if sunlight is elevating mitochondria, melatonin,
yes,
during the day, there would not be a sleepiness-inducing effect, and it would instead just allow for the anti-inflammatory effect of melatonin on the cell membrane?
More antioxidant than anti-inflammatory. Yes. And that's what happens. Yeah, this is why even if you can't get that, because many people are unable to get sun exposure in the winter and almost everywhere in the United States, then you can do, there's other strategies because it's the near-infrared frequency that generates that. So you can do a near-infrared sauna, not far, because far won't cause that to occur.
If it's one of those saunas that's a combination of near-infrared and far-infrared, do you think that suffices? Because some people say that the angle of the photons from the far-infrared will negate some of the effects of the near-infrared.
I don't think so. I think I've not seen literature to support that. I suspect that would be a benefit if you had a sufficient threshold of near-infrared exposure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, some people would hear you say, well, there's going to be a crisis to get out of the sun. Like, it sounds kind of silly. So the reason behind that would be to prepare your immune system to better
prepare your overall resilience, health resilience, because if you're not healthy, look what happened if you weren't healthy in COVID.
Yes, sir. That's a good point.
A lot of people died.
Yeah.
So the healthier you are, the more you'll be able to be resilient. So I think that's probably one of the most foundational things is to get sun exposure. And it's virtually been eliminated from our consciousness in the culture. And actually, the exact converse has been embedded in it because almost all the dermatologists are warning people that the sun causes cancer. Well, you know what, Ben?
Yeah.
The sun does not cause cancer.
That just got published. I think the title of the book is Get the F Out of the Sun.
Yeah.
And it's literally just about how... You know, this idea that a lot of health freaks have championed that sunscreen is full of carcinogens and that the impact of sunscreen is more deleterious than exposure to sunlight is something that is leading a lot of people down the road getting skin cancer from sun exposure. Is there anything to be said for the dangerous potential of sunlight when it comes to excess radiation like UVA or UVA?
Well, sure. There's no question that you never want to get sunburned. That would be foolish. But you really need to explore the fundamental reasons why sun exposure would cause cancer. Why would it trigger cancer?
Okay.
It's because of the other most important strategy, which we alluded to earlier, which is linoleic acid, which is ostensibly an essential fat, and I can make it stronger.
Explain that to people, linoleic acid.
Linoleic acid is...
And by the way, it's different because there's also alpha...
Linolenic
acid, which is ALA. Less of a polyunsaturated fat.
No, it's actually more.
It's more polyunsaturated, but
it's omega 3. I mean, linoleic has two double bonds.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe linolenic has two double bonds. It probably has two.
I think alpha linoleic has more double bonds than linoleic acid, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the omega 3s are typically
less damaging. ALA is less of a problem than linoleic acid.
Well, ostensibly, they stated because it's omega-3, alpha linoleic.
Yeah.
Whereas linoleic, which is 80% of the omega-6 fats, when you're talking about omega-6 fats, you're almost always referring to linoleic acid.
Okay.
So, but it's an excess of this. In the right quantities, the quantities that were essentially in every human on this planet prior to the Civil War, you will not get skin cancer if you had that level of linoleic acid in the tissue.
Levels of linoleic acid.
Yeah, like 2%. Okay. The average person today has 12%.
Can you measure that?
Yeah, you can, absolutely.
Oh, really? Is that what is it called, the omega quant or the omega?
Well, that will give you, a barometer. It's not so much omega quant, you have to do like a fatty acid profile.
Okay.
But the optimal way would be a tissue fat biopsy, which isn't that hard.
You know, okay.
It's better than muscle biopsy.
So let's say people aren't gonna get the biopsy. I guess the biggest elephant in the room here is when you use the term like linoleic acid and the fact that high concentrations of it would increase the possibility for damage in response to sun exposure, what would be some of the primary sources of linoleic acid in the modern American diet?
Well, the primary one is processed foods. And, you know, I think it was like two-thirds of the calories in America that American consumers are from processed foods. So in the primary culprit there is, of course, industrially processed seed oils, which was started around the American Civil War.
Okay.
And they didn't.
And that's why you said the Civil War, because that's when seed oil processing began to increase?
Okay. Absolutely. And it didn't become popular until the 20th century.
What was it about the Civil War that caused that to happen?
It was just industrialization.
Okay.
And we developed the technology to do it. We didn't previously never had it.
Yeah.
And in the 19th century, 99% of the fat that we consumed, 99% came from animal sources. No linoleic acids.
Really?
Yes. And today, about 70%, maybe it's either, it's been a while since I looked at the data, it's either 70 to 90% of the fat that Americans consume is from seed oils.
Wow.
Totally flipped.
Wow. Now, prior to that flip, what about some of these oils? I don't know if these would have a certain concentration of linoleic acid, like extra virgin olive oil.
Oh, yeah. Well, those are minor ones. That's typically the question that most people have. It's because, you know, they're ostensibly viewed as healthy oils, Mediterranean diet and such. If you had a healthy variety, and the range is like from 3 to 20% of an olive oil can be linoleic acid. The lower, the better, of course. 3% is pretty darn safe. The problem with it has been, and this is also what I'm saying for olive oil is also true for avocado oil, is that 80 to 90% of the commercial oils, avocado and olive, are adulterated. Are they adulterated?
I've heard that before.
They're adulterated with
TJ Murphy, the olive oil hunter. Yeah. He exposed that on my podcast. Yeah. I was shocked.
Yeah, no. I'm sure he did expose it, but it was exposed many years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, 60 Minutes did. 60 Minutes.
Great olive oil hoax.
Yeah, 60 Minutes did a whole hoax was saying that. I'm well over 10.
And avocado oil was similar?
Yeah, almost identical. Yeah. So, and the issue is that almost everyone, we're probably the rare anomaly, and not that we're just both being shirtless, but we're both very low in linoleic acid.
Yeah.
We've known about this and consciously avoided it.
Yeah.
So, for me,
at least 9 years.
Yeah.
It's been ruthlessly eliminated from my diet.
Yeah. So and why is it so important? Because these seed oils get embedded in cell membranes, and they have a very low turnover rate. They're not preferentially oxidized as fuel at all. They are stored in your tissue. Where saturated fat would be burned much quicker than a PUFA, polyunsaturated fats.
Yeah.
So it takes. If you're really, really diligent and hyper-obsessive compulsive but avoiding them, you can lower it to almost to normal levels in about 3 years. That's about the earliest. Otherwise, it's closer.
That's that long if you've been following a standard processed food diet.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it could be longer. I think 5 years would probably be safer for most people, maybe even 6 or 7.
I've used it for years. It's one of my go-to nootropic blends because it's like brain food. It's vegan. It's non-GMO. Supports focus and memory and mental energy. 28 research-backed nootropics packed into one teeny tiny bottle. If you've appreciated my work for the last 7 years now, you can attribute a great deal of that to this nootropic. It's called Qualia Mind. Qualia Mind. It's fueled my brain for years now. And you feel it within days. I would say within hours after taking it. You can also try it with a 100% money-back guarantee and 15% off. Here's how. Go to neurohacker.com/BGF and use code BGF at checkout. It's already up to 50% off. You get an extra 15% off the already discounted price and get to try it for 100 days with no financial risk, money-back guarantee, neurohacker.com, neurohacker.com/BGF to try Qualia Mind and get an extra 15% off. How do you like that? Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones,
The ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks.
What is it about the combination of that and sunlight that would make sunlight more dangerous?
Well, it essentially serves as the primary source of oxidative stress in your body.
Okay.
Because of these highly perishable, or these bonds that are highly susceptible to oxidative damage. You know, just one lake acid is two simple dull bonds. When it's exposed to free radicals in your body, which are normal, they're normal signaling molecules, typically generated in mitochondria, things like superoxide dismutase and even nitric oxide, hydrogen peroxide, hydroxyl free radicals. They damage those double bonds, and they convert it to something called an oxlam, which is an oxidative linoleic acid metabolite.
What'd you call it, an oxlam?
Oxlam.
Oxlam.
Okay. Oh, oxidative linoleic acid metabolite.
Okay. Oxlam.
And which are primarily
linoleic acid metabolite.
Yeah, they're primarily reactive aldehydes, things like malonyldehyde,
yeah,
4-hydroxynonenal, thioxyl.
These are a lot of the things that some functional medicine docs will test you for.
Yeah, that's what they should.
You need to do a detox.
Yeah, and what is the almost exclusive source of these guys? Linoleic acid.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. And, people are worried about ages, advanced lactation end products, but the primary source of ages are linoleic acid metabolites.
Really?
2,300
times. Most people say from the combination of sugar with a heated protein.
And most people would be wrong. I mean, I could show you, the study's been out for 20 years showing us. Yeah, it's linoleic acid. So I'm sort of dancing around that to answer your original question, is why is it contributing to cancer? So these oxlams are the primary reason. It's not because they increase inflammation. There are a lot of people who suggest to avoid eating the omega-6s because they increase inflammation because linoleic acids, the next metabolite, converts to arachidonic acid, which is a precursor for many pro-inflammatory eicosanoids and prostaglandins. But that's not the mechanism. The mechanism is it increases oxalates. Hmm. And these oxidations go through the roof and essentially destroys your mitochondria prematurely because there's specific fats in your mitochondrial inner membrane, like the cardiolipin, which I'm sure you've heard of, responsible for forming this that curve within the mitochondria.
And that's not the membrane around the cell.
No, no, it's
the membrane around the mitochondria.
Yeah, the inner mitochondria.
Right.
And the vast majority of the fat in there, because of the perversion of our diet, is cardiolipin.
So the dietary intake of your fat can influence the type of fats that are on your inner mitochondrial membrane.
100%.
And directly impact inner mitochondrial membrane composition.
Yeah, and now I told you I wrote this review paper on vitamin D for nutrients. Well, I just had another review paper published just this year, just like 2 months ago. It was a narrative review of linoleic acid damages. And one of they're pretty aggressive reviewers at it. They had four of the peer reviewers, and one of them was just gave me the argument that linoleic acid has to be healthy because it's in breast milk.
Yeah.
So I obliterated and destroyed his argument because I went back and found a study published in 1950 where they fed this group of people who had like 5% of the women had, no, 5% of the content of the breast milk in these women in the 1950s was linoleic acid, which is much below what it is today. It's like closer to 15%
because
today.
Because the women's diet is
high. It's a radical increase. I mean, that was 75 years ago. So what they did in the experiment, they gave them pure soybean oil or something, just almost pure linoleic acid, and they doubled it within 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. So they artificially elevated levels of linoleic acid in the breast milk in the study based on the
Yeah, because it's just a reflection. You know, his argument was totally invalid because that would mean that, oh, the DDT's in the breast milk, that's okay. Right?
Yeah.
No. It just accumulates whatever your body's feeding. It's the same thing with cardiolipin in your mitochondria. And I've actually had a dialogue with some high-level Canadian clinician who believes that this isn't true, and that because the common belief within conventional science is that 80% of the fatty acids in cardiolipin are linoleic acid. They think that's healthy.
Is that true? The 80%?
Yeah, that is. They say 80 to 90%. Yeah, and I don't dispute.
Now, is that because 80 to 90% is supposed to be, or no, it's currently 80 to 90% based right. on the modern American diet?
Right, because we've been doing this for over 100 years.
So you're saying if you could find somebody 100 years ago,
there are some.
Their mitochondrial membrane wouldn't have such high levels of
linoleic acid. There's a measure of your lives. Yours or mine, it's not going to be as high.
I wish I could get them on measuring time. Yeah, you got to get a biopsy. Huh?
Yeah, I'm not sure the methodology in such a cardiolipid fatty acid concentration, but it's a research. I mean, not something you can do at Quest or Lab.
But surely, if you were to get that omega index score, which is far more common and available, and you were to have like high omega 6 index to omega 3, it would be a pretty decent clue.
Well, it's not so much, I would disagree. No. It's not so much the ratio. You really need the absolute value. So there are other tests. I mean, you could do a fatty acid profile through Quest or LabCorp. Mm-hmm. There are other companies that provide pretty powerful data, like NutriVal. Yeah. NutriVal will give you that data too.
Okay, yeah, NutriVal or the other one. Yeah, so metabolomics is a test by Genova Diagnostics. It's very similar to the NutriVal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would you do if you were out at a Brazilian steakhouse or the Whole Foods salad bar or you actually consumed linoleic acid? Because it's not like, I mean, unless you're extremely cautious, you're going to be able to completely avoid it. Is there something you can consume or do afterwards?
Yeah, there are foods. You know, ultimately it comes down to the food selection that you're having. Typically, animal foods would be higher. Not all animal foods, though. So
what I'm saying is, what if you eat linoleic acid? Like, is this because I've heard Dr. James D. Nicolantonio talk about glycine, spirulina. I've heard other people talk about
activated charcoal would be one way because that's going to bind everything and help you excrete it. But assuming you wanted it assimilated, the best thing to do would be take vitamin E. And I think almost everyone.
Vitamin E.
E, yeah.
Interesting.
It's a very potent inhibitor of peroxidation of the fatty acids.
Any specific form of vitamin E? Or?
Yes. Yeah. There's most 80 to 90% of vitamin E is pure junk. It could make you worse.
Is that because, and I had a conversation with Dr. Barry Tan from Designs for Health about this. He was championing the idea of a variety of mixed tocopherols He said the Anatto plant was an example of something that
He likes Anatto, and I haven't carefully examined it, but the general principles are, first of all, you want it to be the natural isomers. So you don't want a synthetic, and almost all of them are synthetic. And how do you know it's synthetic? There's two isomers, a dec, a right and a left, a D and L, and the only isomer you want is a dextrin, D. So the D isomer. Okay. If it says DL, you know it's synthetic, throw it away.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's one. And then it shouldn't say acetate after it, because that's another synthetic. So DL for tocopherol acetate. Classic. You know, you go into almost any drugstore, that's what it'll have. You just do not want that.
Are there certain dietary sources more readily available than enoxa?
Yeah, this is a great question. I mean, the best dietary sources are seed, nuts, and seed oils. It's like nature kind of put it in there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really hard to get it. You almost have to take a supplement. And you don't need a supplement for it the rest of your life. Once your seed oils are down, like your Ellie, like both of us, mm-hmm. you may not need vitamin E at all. And just the stuff you're going to get in normal foods is fine.
Okay.
But if you're like 99.99% of the population, you're going to really want it.
I'm sure people are now wondering about your diet. And I mean, we just had what for breakfast, rice and oatmeal with some egg yolks and some berries.
Three eggs.
It's interesting because I feel like if I would have had breakfast with you like maybe 5 years ago, you were pretty low carbohydrate.
Oh, yeah.
Doing a lot of the animal.
That's a whole other issue.
So tell me what's changed with your diet. Because that was a pretty good breakfast we had this morning. We didn't have water in it.
Well, it's sort of an extension of my appreciation, deep fundamental appreciation of the dangers of linoleic acid. I've been I definitely want to go back to some of the other issues of cancer, because there's some stats I'm going to share with you that are just mind-blowing. But this deep appreciation of the dangers of linoleic acid, then I started wondering, well, who understood this a long time ago? And it turns out Ray Peet was one of the main biologists.
Longevity guys.
Yeah, was warning about this 1980s. And I had known of his work since about the 1980s and absolutely discounted it because it was so bizarre, so weird. I thought he was a flaky, knucklehead biologist and didn't know what he was talking about. But then I said, if he knew about linoleic acid, there's got to be, this guy has got to have something up his sleeve. And I started looking at him and examining what he was talking about. And it blew my mind. And I greatly regret that I just understood his brilliance. Literally, he's an iconoclastic legend in my view. And understanding mitochondrial function, how to optimize it. And we would need 3 to 4 hours to go into that, so we don't have the time to do that. But just take it for granted. And this is going to be part of the things in the course, is that just brilliant. He can help people understand how to optimize biological function. And it's not with beta oxidation of fats in mitochondria. I was wrong. Totally wrong. The ideal one is glucose. And the best source of food.
Consuming adequate amounts of glucose.
Well, glucose is a fuel. You can get it from different ways. Ideally, you want to get it when it's bound, the glucose is bound to fructose, mm-hmm. You know, as a disaccharide.
As you find it, like honeys and fruits. And
absolutely. Yeah. Honey and ripe grapefruits, which is key. But anyway, that goes in and optimizing that. So that's how I became aware of this. And interestingly, I just give you a brief history. One, because I integrated his approach earlier this year. I was pretty healthy. I mean, pretty healthy for the most part. So once I did it, I was having about 150 grams of carbs like you, but I upped it to about 400 to 500. Now, I'm not suggesting everyone needs to be 400 to 500. You have to have a high level of activity. And you can't have insulin resistance. If you do, it'll be a disaster.
That's what I understand is part of the repeat approach is high energy flux.
Yes.
Meaning marrying adequate carbohydrate intake, even as high as what you're saying, you're working yourself up to that 400 to 500 grams. With activities that would increase glucose transporters, doing some walking or staying physically active or getting sunlight or engaging in lifestyle activities that would be the opposite of not eating many carbohydrates, being cold, hungry, and libidinless, and slightly inactive.
And low testosterone.
Yeah, and low testosterone, which I had to deal with when I was following this ketogenic diet.
Most everyone does. Yeah. It's classic, and it's just an absolute perfect classic illustration of the fact of inadequate cellular energy to make the testosterone. The answer is not testosterone replacement. The answer is to fix the problem. So anyway, I did this. I dropped 10 pounds in weight. My body fat went from 15% down to 12%.
You tripled your carbs and you dropped that amount of weight.
But, wow. And that was, went from 15% to 12% done by the inline, I think it's the inline body measurement, which I think is the best.
In body.
It's almost identical to DEXA with none of the radiation.
Yeah.
So if you want to really know what your body fat is, I would do the in body for sure. And those went from 15, that was 15 the year before, and then 12 shortly after I did that. My hHCRP, high sensitivity C-reactive protein, I couldn't get it down below 0.8, which is still healthy.
It's still a marker of inflammation.
Yeah. So, and I got it down 0.18.
Yeah.
0.18. My fasting blood sugar went down 10 points. 10 points!
Wow. And why do you think that is? Well, that's paradoxical that your blood glucose would have decreased when you tripled your carbohydrate intake.
Because your blood sugar is not necessarily related to the amount of carbs you're eating. I mean, it is related, but it has to do with the metabolic health.
Yeah, there you're going. Are you talking about the potential for a hypercortisolic response to inadequate
glucose? Yeah, when you don't have enough cortisol.
Causing a paradoxical rise in glycogenolysis and an increase in blood glucose because you're high cortisol due to lack of...
That's what Georgie Dinko helped me understand, is that, yes, you know, there's not an excursion of glucose levels. You have a very steady glucose level when you're low carb, but it does it because your body wants to stay alive. Mm-hmm. If you go into low blood sugar levels, you will die.
The same reason that someone who's even eating a low carbo diet would have extremely high blood glucose level after workout or after a sauna or after a cold plunge, because there's a transient rise of glucose in response to stress, With those activities, you tend to see long-term blood glucose stabilization because of the impact of those activities.
Well, the stabilization,
hormetic stress.
The stabilization is only due to the secretion of cortisol and other stress hormones like glycogen.
But what I'm saying is consistent carbohydrate depletion would cause the body would still need to cause an elevation in blood glucose due to the stress. But that elevation in blood glucose has to come from the liver and from muscle and eventually muscle fiber breakdown.
Well, it's the other way around. It actually comes from the liver is a processing. It's the amino acids are sacrificially extracted from your muscles, bone.
Right.
In these really important tissues, and they're shuttled to the liver in a process called gluconeogenesis to create blood sugar.
What do you say to people who say, well, why not just increase dietary protein? So
that because you could do that, but it's a very expensive way to do it. And there's some side effects because you create a lot of extra ammonia and that is really hard on your kidneys. And many people are suffering with kidney challenges.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you, there's the ideal amount of protein from my understanding, and you certainly have your insights on it, but it's about 0.7 grams per pound of body weight.
Yeah. 0.55 is the minimum.
Yeah.
Above 0.8 grams per pound, not grams per kilogram. Grams per pound, you tend to see a law of diminishing returns unless you're extremely high in the weightlifting and a bodybuilder. Some bodybuilders will still build and assimilate at 1.2 grams per pound plus, but that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
That's the rare part of the population.
And that, there's a downside of that.
So 0.7, that's a good approximation. So based on that, I do want to get back to linoleic acid and cancer, by the way, but I'm just curious, what's a typical day of eating look like for you besides the rice and goose eggs and the blueberries and the watermelon we have for breakfast this morning?
Well, and the eggs, the egg yolks that we have are from the chickens or the geese that I raise, and they're fed very special diets. The geese?
Yeah,
they're geese.
I mean, why geese though?
We initially got them because we wanted them to eat the weeds. They eat a lot less food than chickens because they mostly eat the grass.
Is the egg profile similar as far as?
No, the egg profile is much more radically improved. Because they don't eat typical feed. They're mostly vegetarian. So their result, their linoleic acid is much
lower. Lower omega-6, lower linoleic acid in their eggs.
This is why chickens and pigs are not really great foods to eat. They are ideally, but they're monogastric animals. They only have one stomach, and as a result, they're just like us. And any linoleic acid that they're given tends to accumulate in their tissues. So almost, I don't care if it's organic free-range chickens or pigs, they're almost all given grains, which are loaded with linoleic acid. They're very, very high.
You pasture pork to which pasture sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's very unusual. I mean, there are some, you can, if you raise them yourself, you can avoid it, but it's
a surprise a lot of people hear about it.
Yeah. So anyway, what I normally have, I love ripe fruit. It's probably the majority of my carbohydrates is ripe fruit. So I'll start the day with, it depends if it's a rest day or it's a sauna day. So I'll do 3-4, maybe even more, 4 pounds of cut watermelon, not the rind.
And ripe is because more important to you than say the resistant starch that some people want from an unripe banana, and for you it's because of that blend of glucose and fructose.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what I do. And I've had some kidney damage as a result of mercury in proper mercury extraction done 30 years ago. So I challenged with this. So I cannot go high. I really rarely go over 105 grams of protein a day.
Okay.
So I have some lamb. Would be my primary meat, but I only have like 3 ounces of lamb. That's it.
Yeah,
a relatively small amount. But so my protein comes from other sources primarily.
That's still because what do you weigh approximately?
180.
Okay, so you're not too far below 0.7 grams per pound protein at 105 grams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and because I'm a big believer of you, and I'm, you know, this is the first time you've been to my place, but I'm so impressed with your exercise routine. It's radically modified my things. We don't have time to talk about it, but. Believe me, I will acknowledge you in the course because you're such a classic illustration of implementing what I believe is. And I've been passionate about exercise as you have been since 1968.
Yeah, you were part of the big marathoning craze.
So I had most of it wrong, and I'm gradually evolving and refining my progress, my perception of that. And you radically help in that area with respect to, because it's all about movement. It really is all about movement. You've got to nail in. You are not a muscle, a bodybuilding muscle head, which a lot of people are, because if you do excessive resistance training, if you do excessive resistance training, you will die prematurely.
Yeah.
It's great stuff, but it's just small doses.
Not to rabbit hole too much, but that's part of that J curve that James
was saying. Yeah. Reverse J curve.
Yeah, reverse J curve, meaning that not only do you reach a law of diminishing returns when you get to about 180 minutes of high to moderate intensity cardiovascular exercise, but the law of diminishing returns for what would be considered like intense heavy weightlifting is even lower than that.
Much lower. Yeah. Anything over an hour a week could be a problem.
Yeah.
And I saw you work out today, and maybe you did about 5 to 10 minutes, maybe not even that. Maybe zero, because you were working out, but you're working out that intensely.
What I do is I'll do a few lifts, but then I do mobility.
Yeah, it's almost all mobility.
Get down off the ground, a little foam rolling. So even though I'm sometimes in the gym for an hour
or two,
I typically might reach 20 minutes or so of actual weight training during that time. When I'm at home, it's just that ARS.
But your weight training isn't that intense. It's not like you're pushing
it's not
failure.
Like
you're
heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not in the pain kit.
I think it's better for the joints also. If I go heavy, it's not heavy. It's either blood flow restriction bands to trick the muscles into thinking they're lifting a heavy weight, or a moderate weight lifted super slow, which I think carries with it much more longevity and sport and lower risk.
You really have it dialed in. I great respect for what you've been able to, the knowledge and practical skill set you put together over your lifespan. So it's congratulations.
Well, that's my jam.
I know.
Strength condition. That's what my degree was in.
Yeah.
But so back to the diet. You've got things like the goose eggs, you have the rice, the oatmeal, the berries, the ripe fruit. What about like organ meats, meat, things like that?
Oh, yeah. Organ meat. You don't need much. I mean, maybe you have 10 grams of organ meat a day, you know, small amount. And then I have raw milk. For sure, and I have a lot of white rice, basmati white rice, because it's
white rice versus like sweet potatoes or yams or purple potatoes.
You could use potatoes. You have to be somewhat careful. I'm not about potato paste, but I was having red potatoes, small red potatoes, not russet potatoes. Mm-hmm. But you have to be really careful and cook them incredibly well. I pressure cook mine because there's the starch that can form, and we don't have the enzyme capacity to digest those starches easily. So it passes through our small intestine to large intestine, forms as fuel for the bacteria in your colon.
You mean if you're consuming tubers without doing something like pressure cooking?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't know if I'd have any tuber other than rice, than potatoes. And then
and then
they have to consider the oxalate issue too. So, but if you're pressure cooking them, the oxalates are water soluble, so they're going to
get. That's my understanding. Get rid of the oxalates, can decrease a lot of the lectin and get rid of any type of problematic starch by pressure cooking.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to cook a tuber.
Yeah. So you do that, and then you can actually, your body can absorb the fuel rather than the bacteria. The danger of bacteria doing it is that the gram negative specifically, they can reduce something called lipopolysaccharide. And LPS for short, which is another term for endotoxin, which increases serotonin, which is a whole the rabbit hole we can go down. But bad news. So I wanted to switch back to the linoleic acid because it is, in my view, aside from sun exposure and movement, it's hard to prioritize them. They're fundamentally foundational.
Yeah, you don't have to prioritize. Yeah. Every day I stack earthing and grounding, sunlight, some form of weight bearing, hot, cold, water, minerals, and some type of movement and mobility. That's like a typical day for me. If I can check off those boxes,
you're doing another one, and you've done it for the last 9 years, so you don't even recall it, but you're avoiding linoleic acid.
Yeah.
So this is astonishing information. And I kind of knew of it, but I didn't compile it into a table until after I wrote my paper. But as I was preparing presentations, I said, oh my gosh, this is crazy. So the amount of obesity in the 1800s was about 1%. So per 100,000, you had about 1,000 people.
1%.
Yeah.
That's not because obesity was less reported, it was less existent.
It didn't exist. Okay. I mean, but it still was there. Because not all obesity is connected to linoleic acid. There's a lot of other things that can cause it. So, because even in the 19th century, they had obesity, 1%. Mm-hmm. Today, we have like 40% on our way to 50%.
Are you referring to America primarily?
Well, industrialized countries in the West.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've got an increase from 1% to 40% of 40x in that time frame. Then you go to diabetes. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have that many diabetics. It was a lot less than 1,000. It was like, you know, type 2 diabetes, not type 1. Because type 1 is an autoimmune disease.
Which, and again, this was not necessarily because less knowledge of the condition existed were less diagnosed cases or there were underreported cases.
Yeah.
This is pretty ironclad that they actually have less diabetes and have less obesity.
Yeah. And now you can make a strong argument. I mean, you're not formal legally classified as diabetics, but either diabetes or pre-diabetes, which I consider a fasting blood sugar, anything over 3 digits.
Okay.
You know, that's 30% of the country.
Anything over 3 digits?
Yeah, 100 or more.
Oh, okay. I got what you're saying. Yeah, okay. Anything over, you don't mean immediate postprandial glucose.
No. I said fasting. I was
okay,
really clear.
Fasting glucose. Okay, fasting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And there's, you know, there is no danger to have a blood sugar 130.
For reasons I just stated earlier, don't test it right after you exercise. You'll freak out and think your fasted glucose is way higher than it should be. Do it fasted and relax.
Yeah, for sure. So it's 30%, and it's gone up like 50x. No, wait, not 50x. I think it's 500x. I should have looked at the table.
Wait, what's gone up 500x?
Diabetes.
Okay.
Yeah. And the treatment for diabetes is not glucose restriction. It isn't. Now, you can control it with a low-carb diet. That doesn't mean you're curing it at all. You know what the fundamental reason for almost all diabetes is?
I mean, I'm going to guess that you're going to say the illness of rheumatoid acid.
It's linoleic acid.
But explain that. Why is that?
Because it ruins the ability in the mitochondria to allow glucose to be optimally metabolized. So if you can't metabolize it, then where's it going to go? It's going to be shuttled out into the cytosol, the cell, and it's going to go into glycolysis.
Yeah.
And you're going to increase lactate, and it just messes things up. And it basically, that is the Warburg metabolism. Otto Warburg was a guy that got one PhD in
history. I'm seeing the cancer link now. Keep going.
Yeah, he's commonly attributed that sugar is the fuel of cancer, and he never said that. And that his work does not show that it isn't the fuel of cancer at all. It uses it, but it's the distorted metabolism. Now, what is the Warburg effect? It's when your mitochondria is unable to burn glucose, despite the fact that there's plenty of oxygen, and it goes into glycolysis. Now, when you and I put on the
normally, if your mitochondria had blood glucose and there was oxygen available, it would be able to metabolize that glucose to produce ATP.
Right, normally.
In a healthy, normal state.
Yeah, assuming you haven't overfed on glucose or you haven't been sedentary for a long time. But if we were to sprint or put the Katsu bands on and do some, go to, you know,
like really intense training. The blood flow restriction bands.
Yeah. Then you are creating an oxygen deficit. There isn't enough oxygen to burn glucose. So that is not the Warburg effect, because you're going to create lactate, but that's what your body's designed to do. That is a rescue mechanism that's healthy.
Right.
But if you're doing that when there's plenty of oxygen, you have a problem. That's cancer metabolism.
Yeah.
So is that
because the cancer will thrive, not necessarily in the presence of high glucose, but because it will thrive in an anaerobic, high acidic state?
No, it's more fundamental than that. It's actually getting back to the creation of energy within the mitochondria. So if it's shunted and you have to rely on beta oxidation, these processes are going to create ultimately more oxidative damage. They do that through a mechanism that we don't have time to discuss, and virtually no one watching this understands. It does it through the creation of reductive stress, which why mechanisms, I think me and I talked to this yesterday, some of the mechanisms of methane blue and ozone are related to reducing that reductive stress.
Right.
Yeah. So that's how they work. But linoleic acid is the exact opposite. It causes reductive stress. And that's one of the reasons that mitochondria gets damaged and dies prematurely. You know, it's all about the mitochondria.
No, if you're Dr. Steelman, your argument, what's the number one argument against what you're saying regarding linoleic acid? Because surely you've gotten some pushback from this.
There really is no hardcore. I mean, other than the delusional concepts, like it's in breast milk, so it must be healthy. You know, it's just, they just, it's just an ignorance of the basic science of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that is the fundamental component of Pete's work is low linoleic acid. It's many people who teach it don't really, I mean, they mention it, all of them mention it, but they don't necessarily emphasize as much as I think they should.
If you were to look at something like epidemiological data or
Dan Gehringer's
work in the blue zones or something like that, if you were to investigate those diets, would you find consistently lower amounts of linoleic acid, do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the studies have been done. Chris Kenobi, who's an ophthalmologist by training, has essentially quit his practice and turned into an investigative journalist on this. And he's done great review of the world literature in 25 countries he's examined and gathered statistics and made the graphs and everything. And I've kind of compiled that and put it into something even simpler. So one of the most astonishing pieces of information data that I shared with you yesterday on our walk is that the incidence of heart disease in the United States was essentially unknown in the 19th century. The first reported heart attack in the United States was in 1912. Essentially, it was like maybe a handful of people had heart disease in the 19th century. So we go from that to the point that we have over 250,000 people today in the United States dying every year, dying from heart attacks. Mm-hmm. That is like millions of times increase.
Can you attribute that to one specific factor, though? I mean, economic status means access to higher palatable foods and a more sedentary lifestyle due to the advent of technology and possibly more stress. I mean, there's got to be a cluster of factors that would result in that. I mean, surely you can't say all of it is related to linoleic.
No, clearly not all of it. There's no question. EMFs and everything too are also contributing. But in my view, there's no other explanation for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, what else can cause it?
I went to India.
Yeah.
Because I had to be very careful in India. This was 3 years ago. I'd have to ask every time for the chef to come out and ask them to prepare my meal in olive oil or in ghee or butter.
Ghee would do that.
And the reason for that is prior to going to India, because I had to give a lot of talks about health. And I noted that the increase in chronic disease, particularly diabetes in India, did not correlate at all to an increase in average percentage of carbohydrate or sugar.
Right, exactly.
Instead, skyrocketed as soon as vegetable oil was introduced as a substitute oil for the common oils that are used there. So I get what you're saying.
I think
it's still multifactorial, but I've seen some of the data on the increase in vegetable oil consumption and the direct rise of chronic disease.
That's exactly what it is. And Chris Kenobi has really done an excellent job of documenting that. And now that I'm thinking about it, and you mentioned that, probably the biggest argument against this would be the people saying that it's all the carbohydrates.
Yeah.
It's all the carbs. And if you go to certain countries, like really large countries like China, one of the biggest countries in the world, and the amount of sugar is actually decreased.
Yeah.
Decreased. And vegetables went up and disease went up just following almost the
maybe you're at least making some friends now with the corn and grain lobbyists.
No. Corn and grain are full of seeds. That's the primary source.
Yeah,
this is not my first book.
Back to why the geese that eat the plants are going to be healthier than the chickens or pigs.
Right. Yeah, my first book in 2004, almost 20 years ago, was A No-Grain Diet, which I wasn't thrilled with the title of that book, but it actually is good, and I tend to agree with it, except for the anomaly would be things like white rice, not brown rice, because brown rice has a lot of the linoleic acid and you could do oatmeal if you're careful, but you know, gluten is not your friend, and most of them are sprayed with glyphosate, so you've got to be careful. I mean, I don't think virtually anyone should be eating wheat.
Yeah, you briefly mentioned EMF.
Yeah, yeah.
The same way that there might be a correlation, because I'm just thinking here about the radiative effect of sunlight and the consequences of high linoleic acid consumption and sunlight exposure. It drives me nuts when I walk through the average, like, blue water resort, and everybody's sitting around eating french fries and chicken wings. My gosh, this is the worst time to be doing that. Preferably do it indoors, out of the sun. But when it comes to EMF, or you know, electromagnetic radiation or non-native EMF, dirty electricity, etc., would you have an increased susceptibility to the damages of that if you have high linoleic acid consumption?
Well, there's no study that shows that, but George Dinka, who's a mentor of mine, has explained really clearly previously that people who have low linoleic acid diets have much less risk of dying from exposure to high doses of ionizing radiation, like from a nuclear blast.
But like an EMF, like a Wi-Fi router, that's not ionizing radiation.
It's not ionizing, but they're real similar. And in fact, so what happens, what we believe the mechanism for damage from EMFs is because it catalyzes the release of calcium inside the cell. Because the levels of calcium outside the cell are 50,000 times higher. 50,000 times higher. So when it goes into the cell, it's a powerful signaling molecule. And what does the signal cell do? It tells cells what some of the things are. It increases the release of superoxide and also nitric oxide. And those are two molecules that they get even close to each other. They instantaneously form this reactive nitrogen species called peroxynitrite. And that is really, really damaging, probably collectively far more damaging than hydroxyl free radical, because hydroxyl radical only lasts about a billionth of a second. This peroxynitrite lasts 1,000 times longer, so long that it can actually migrate outside of the mitochondria, outside of that cell, and go into another cell in the mitochondria and hang around that long. So as a result, the longer it stays around, it hangs around it, because it's almost as damaging as hydroxyl. But hydroxyl is more damaging, but it lasts 1,000 times longer.
Yeah.
So anyway,
so it's just calcium influx into the cell. So how would linoleic acid cause an increase in that already present calcium influx into the cell?
Well, that's how EMF, we think, does it. And there's pretty strong evidence for that. It turns out that linoleic acid has the same molecular action. That's what it causes.
Really?
It causes calcium to go into the cells. Not only does it create the oxalates, it causes, and I didn't put this in my paper either, but because I didn't connect the dots. And our life is busy, you just forget to do something. But this is an important component, is that there's another way that linoleic acid contributes to increasing cancer, is that through this calcium influx. But the other thing that's almost, in many ways, very similar, because it has, I think, the same number of double bonds, is estrogen. Estrogen is not your friend. It is not a postmenopausal woman's friend. This is a dangerous, dangerous molecule.
You mean excess estrogen?
No, I mean... Yeah, no, you do. There's almost virtually no indication you can take an estrogen supplement.
Right, but if your body is naturally producing
you need some. Yeah, yeah.
And why is that?
It's because this calcium influx is one, but it's one of the primary contributors for cancer. No question. Excess estrogen. And not only do we get it from supplements and well-intentioned but misinformed physicians prescribing it, but we get it from xenoestrogens.
Xenoestrogens,
phytoestrogens.
How much of it is the excess estrogen versus a progesterone to estrogen balance, like low levels of progesterone?
Well, that's a big part of it. You're unquestionable. Now, we talked earlier about the major danger of low carbs is because your body would release cortisol, and cortisol just shreds your muscle protein. Well, guess what one of the most effective cortisol blockers are?
Progesterone.
Yeah. It just annihilates.
It's kind of funny. Even a lot of guys, and there's an entire book written about this. I forget the doctor, but he wrote a book about anxiety. He'll even use progesterone sometimes transdermally in children who have ADD and ADHD. But Dr. Chris Shade actually is who turned me on to this idea. He said, hey, stressed out at the end of the day, a little anxious, you know, having trouble turning the brain off, just put a little progesterone like on the inside of the forearm, and almost immediately you feel this drop in anxiety.
Yeah, you could, typically we're looking for longer term solutions, so that you have to be really careful about it, because that will work short term, but long term it's not a good idea. You want to, it has to be absorbed or connected with a long chain fat.
Okay.
To get absorbed. Because if you just swallow progesterone pill, which you can't really do, you can buy pregnenolone powder, you can buy DHA powder, but you can't buy progesterone powder.
I've just always recommended 3% transdermal progesterone
cream. I don't think it's a good idea long term. Because I did that. The guy who recommended it initially was John Lee.
Yeah.
Who passed away in September.
John Lee, and then Dr. Michael, somebody wrote the anxiety book, and he's another guy.
Yeah, but it should be in a long chain fat, and ideally administered orally, or you could do it transmucosally through a suppository, either vaginal or rectal. But I can give you the link to a company that I really like that I think does a really good job of it. And
Oral progesterone. Okay.
Yeah. Because I wouldn't do transdermal. I mean, it's okay for a while, but what I neglected to mention is that when I was using it in my practice, it worked almost for everyone in the first few months, but then, 3-6 months, you felt this tolerance, tachyphylaxis to it.
Yeah, I've heard there's a little bit of a tachyphylactic response, especially the transdermal. That's and again, like I would use it very infrequently.
But for a woman who needs it, and I would make a strong argument for many men, especially low carbers, that progesterone could be a real benefit to them to increasing their testosterone level.
Yeah, and I'm pretty chill as it is. You saw me on the intermittent hypoxic yesterday.
Oh my gosh,
you impressed me.
Yeah,
yeah. I know that's kind of geeked out exercise stuff for people, but tell people about that intermittent hypoxic just briefly.
Well, we have a device that can generate, it's a medical grade device. So it produces really pure, clean oxygen. The oxygen level in the air that we breathe is about 20%. This device can dial that back down to as low as 9%, which is kind of dangerous. But it's also attached to a pulse oximeter, a medical grade pulse oximeter, not the one you buy for $25. It costs like 20 times that. And it accurately measures your PO2 levels. So it can monitor to see what your blood oxygen concentration is. And if you can get it down to the low 80s and keep it there, that's a really powerful stimulus to produce.
Not all the time.
No.
I mean short term.
Short term, yeah. You know, with this device, it essentially gives you pulses of, in our case, it's about 15% oxygen concentration, which is not much different than room air, which is 20%. Yep. But then you do that for 7 minutes, or you can change the time, but essentially, you know, 5 to 7 minutes, maybe 10. And then you go for 2 minutes, you pop into hyperoxia, where you get oxygen concentration like 30, room air or higher, like 34%, like we got. And then, you know, it just generates all these intriguing hormonal and metabolic benefits. And especially if you're doing it with a mask on, and because you're getting this administered through an oxygen mask.
And you're just sitting in a chair, even though you told me beforehand, you're like, this is going to feel like Wim Hof breath work. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. So I sat there for the first 10 minutes or so, didn't notice a lot. And then gradually my fingers began to tingle. I feel that slight oxygen hunger when it dropped, and then you get that rush of oxygen when it comes back in, just like you're doing breath work. Mm-hmm. This machine is doing it all kind of for you, because I was laid back on an eye mask and like new calm and in this deep meditative state, would almost get trance-like every time it dropped the oxygen. And it's called, the actual title for this would be IHT, right? Intermittent hypoxic training.
Right.
And this unit that you use, are you able to share the brand?
Yeah, I'm currently using a CellGym.
CellGym.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's probably has a different name now because of the process of changing things. So it's mostly designed for commercial use because it's pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's a powerful thing. But you can, hopefully they'll come up with home units at some point in the future. But you can, you know, to get that benefit. But you can get similar benefits. You're not going to get the IHT benefits, but just the NuCom app itself, which we like. It's kind of pricey.
For meditation,
yeah, especially with some good set of earbuds.
Yeah.
But if you do use the NuCom, there's only one channel that works, and that works. I mean, two. You like the nap one too, but the rescue channel. Rescue channel.
Yeah.
And all the apps are good.
I have a whole podcast about the NuCom. I'll link to in the show notes. Yeah. Again, bengreenfieldlife.com/Mercola, the number 3, MERCULLA, the number 3. The NuCom is an app that has these trance-like sounds that are unlike anything I've ever heard.
Yeah, they're like 3 gigabyte files.
And you're right. If you're going to use anything, go to the rescue tracks, and like the 50, the 70, or the 120-minute rescue tracks are amazing.
Yeah. My favorites are the 100 and then the 50.
Yeah.
And it's something I do every day with pretty much every day. I would say 5 to 6 times a week.
Either the CellGym or the NuCom.
Both.
Both together, though, with the gravity chair you have set up. I mean, that's a game changer.
Yeah.
I was telling you, Dr. John Laurent, shout out to our friend John. He has this thing called the shift wave chair in his office, which vibrates as you breathe in and breathe out in timing correlation to your breathing. That would be pretty amazing
for sure.
I haven't gotten those chairs, but thinking about it. One thing that I thought of as you were describing the deleterious impact of the combination of linoleic acid and EMFs is ever since talking to you about your first book on the podcast, EMF, and I still think people should go back and listen to that episode. I started anytime I'm on an airplane or in like an Airbnb with a ton of different Wi-Fi signals coming in, or pretty much anywhere besides my house, which, like yours, is the hardwired Ethernet and the low EMF and all the dirty electricity mitigation filters in it. I take magnesium, I take NAD, and I take hydrogen. Those are my top three that I'll take when I'm in a high EMF environment, because the magnesium seems to offset some of the calcium influx, and the hydrogen and the NAD are selected antioxidants.
I could, well, and it, I think D isn't really an antioxidant.
All right. Well, the NAD would be more for kind of like the DNA repair or protection.
Yeah. So I would modify that somewhat now because I think exogenous ketones are really useful. I'm not a big fan of people going into ketosis themselves because the process of going into ketosis is stress response.
You mean ketosis without the use of exogenous ketones and fasting or starving yourself in this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Or time-restricted eating, intermittent fasting. So you don't really want to create ketones yourself initially, especially if you're metabolically healthy, but you can take exogenous ones. Like Frank Loza. Yeah, those would be classic examples. They can really help. And
ketone aid,
right? Yeah, and so that can be really useful if you're getting exogenously. That with respect to NAD precursor, NAD. I mean, you don't want to take NAD yourself. It's very expensive. It's unnecessary. But I think the ideal one. This is one of my key points. Is niacinamide by itself. It's simple, inexpensive. You can get like year supply for $10.
Different than niacinamide?
Totally different. Well, they're both called vitamin B3. Niacin is the one that pumps your flush. Niacinamide, NAD, what is that? It's searched for nicotinamide, adenine dinucleotide. Mm-hmm. The nicotinamide is another term for niacinamide. It's not niacin adenine, it's not niacinamide adenine dinucleotide.
Oh, interesting.
The actual molecule of NAD is composed of niacinamide, not niacin. Yes, you can convert niacin to niacinamide, but that's another. It's not as efficient.
So you can just supplement niacinamide and get a similar effect.
Like 50 milligrams. Mm-hmm. 50 milligrams. You don't want to take 500. More is not better. There's a Goldilocks dose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually just tweeted about that, especially in someone with poor methyl donors an MTHFR deficit or high state of inflammation. High amounts of NAD can actually be harmful in a situation like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I pretty much take niacinamide regularly. I think that's one of the core things. I mean, vitamin E, most people need niacinamide at a small level, two or three times a day, 50 milligrams. And that is the best precursor. And all the lifestyle, circadian rhythm, optimization, exercise, because NAMPT is the rate limiting enzyme, but you have to have the fuel once you've activated NAMPT.
Infrared sauna, fermented foods, there's a few different things that will increase.
Yeah. So that's really good stuff.
All right. There's a video floating around of you out there, and I want to hunt it down and put it in the show notes of you crushing a young, virile man in an arm wrestling.
Yes, indeed.
Is that video out there?
Yes.
Find it, put it in the show notes?
Absolutely.
Okay. So there's a note to my editor. Hunt it down, put it in the show notes. Dr. Joe Mercola, arm wrestling. Dr. D from Miami, what's your secret? How'd you get strong enough to beat a young buck in arm wrestling?
Well, this I hadn't been embracing Pete's work for about 6 months at that time. So my mitochondria.
Repeat,
okay. Yeah. My mitochondria were tuned. I mean, I'm not only metabolically flexible, but I had ultimate fuel in my mitochondria, glucose, was being substituted. But an additional thing I was doing was the KATSU, the blood flow restriction training that I've been doing for about 6 years. And that what that does is it activates type 2 fibers, specifically the endurance fibers that you get from high intensity and stuff. And you can tell if you watch the video that he kind of, which is exactly what you expect, his type 1 fibers failed.
Exactly. In about very 20 long 30 seconds. Competition. Like he had the initial
he was
push on you, but as soon as his fast switch muscle pooped out, you could see that you just kept recruiting.
Well, was this
recruiting and recruiting?
Yeah, that's right. And my fast twitch fibers were much better trained.
Yeah.
Much better. Because that's what KATSU does.
Yeah.
And so I just
mention lactate buffering. Yeah.
That's right, buffering.
Yeah. That's an impressive video.
I surprised a lot of people. It was really my achievement, my fitness achievement for this year. I mean, I've done a 400-pound deadlift before, 650-pound leg press, but I'm most pleased with that.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah. We've only scratched the surface of your body of knowledge, but you've alluded to this masterclass a couple of times.
Yeah.
How soon can people expect that to be out?
I'm hoping by the end of the year. It's going to be really, really inexpensive.
We're recording in September of 2023.
Yeah, it's like we're targeting like $5 a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I want this to be available to everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the purpose is to prepare people for what's coming. Because I've been doing this for 50 years. And I've compiled a lot of knowledge, and it gets confusing because there's some of this, some of that. Well, I feel it's my personal responsibility to put it all together, make it clear as can be.
Yeah.
It takes me like 10 to 20 hours to make one of these modules.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about it. It consumes almost all my time.
Yeah. I love to learn from you, man. I mean, a lot of people ask me who my mentors are, and I can't say that I have a specific person who I talk to on the phone or anything like that, but you've definitely influenced me a lot, so I'm super grateful for you and grateful to be able
well, thanks,
to nail you down for a 3-peat. 3-peat with Ray-peat. All right, well, folks, again, the show notes are going to be at BenGreenfieldLive.com/Mercola3, including the arm wrestling video if you want to see that. If his master class is out, I'll stick it in there as well if that's out by now. And if not, I'll put it in retro later on. And thank you so much, Joe, for doing this. Thank you to everybody for listening in. Until next time, I'm Ben Greenfield, along with Joe Mercola, signing out from BenGreenfieldLife.com. Have an amazing week.
More than ever these days, people like you and me need a fresh, entertaining, well-informed, and often outside-the-box approach to discovering the health and happiness and hope that we all crave. So I hope I've been able to do that for you on this episode today. And if you liked it, or if you love what I'm up to, then please leave me a review on your preferred podcast listening channel, wherever that might be, and just find the Ben Greenfield Life episode. Say something nice. Thanks so much. It means a lot.
In compliance with the FTC guidelines, please assume the following about links and posts on this site. Most of the links going to products are often affiliate links, of which I receive a small commission from sales of certain items, but the price is the same for you, and sometimes I even get to share a unique and somewhat significant discount with you. In some cases, I might also be an investor in a company I mention. I'm the founder, for example, of Keon LLC, the makers of Keon-branded supplements and products, which I talk about quite a bit. Regardless of the relationship, if I post or talk about an affiliate link to a product, it is indeed something I personally use, support, and with full authenticity and transparency, recommend in good conscience. I personally vet each and every product that I talk about. My first priority is providing valuable information and resources to you that help you positively optimize your mind, body, and spirit. And I'll only ever link to products or resources, affiliate or otherwise, that fit within this purpose. So there's your fancy legal disclaimer.